Bernard, and today we're speaking with Anne Grant. She's the author of The Divorce Hacker's Guide to Untying the Knot, What Every Woman Needs to Know About Finances, Child Custody, Lawyers, and Planning Ahead. And Anne Grant began her career as a corporate litigator specializing in unfair business practices and consumer fraud. But after her divorce, she created her own firm focusing on family law and a holistic approach to this life transition. And her website is The Divorce DivorceHacker.com. Welcome to the show, Anne.
Thank you, Marie. I'm excited to be here.
Thank you. So you went through your own divorce experience and realized that it would have really been nice to have like a handbook to help you get through such a stressful and challenging period in your life. So you've created this book. Can you tell us a little bit more about your story and why you wrote the book?
Sure. So about 10 years ago, I was in a situation where things were going great, or so they seemed. My husband at the time and I have three children. They were quite young at that point. We were both corporate litigators. I was traveling quite a bit. But everything seemed great. We had a beautiful home, a nice lifestyle, three lovely kids, good jobs, until it all came crashing to a screeching halt. It was a Tuesday night. I couldn't sleep. And when he walked in the door, I could just tell by the spring in his step that he was a little bit peppier than you would expect for someone who'd had a long day culminating in meetings that went till 11 at night. And so I confronted him and learned that our marriage was over.
Hmm.
And what followed that was a series of life events that can only be described as sort of a perfect storm. it was right during the start of the recession, and my law firm where I was a partner dissolved. So my marriage was dissolving. My partnership dissolved. And then, lo and behold, my father, who was really a rock for me in so many ways and was a great support with the children through all this, he passed away suddenly.
Mm.
So for me, it was just the trifecta of loss. And what I experienced was that the coping skills that I had developed throughout my life were inadequate to deal with the what I was experiencing. We were about to lose our home. It was pretty bad. And so I began a practice of meditation in the mornings and prayer to calm myself and ground myself to deal with all the things that were needing to be dealt with. And through that practice, I found my way, and I was able to do the things that needed to be done. I was able to let go of what needed to be let go of. I let go of the big family house. We downsized. That ended up being a great blessing. It brought me and the children even closer. And as I gradually put my life back together, people in the community could see that I was getting through a very difficult situation and began to come to me for advice in their own marriages. And before long, I found that my practice was entirely family law. I found that not only were the skills that I had honed over the years as a corporate litigator useful, but what was really helpful was my experiential skill set from having been through such a difficult high conflict divorce, learning really what worked and a lot of things that didn't work. And I could see with the people that were coming in and working with me that, like me, their lives were changing for the better. And so I decided to write this book because I did find that as I went through the experience, even though I was a lawyer, there was nothing out there to provide the kind of guidance I was looking for. I really needed a book that was sort of like what to expect when you're expecting, but for divorce. And so I wrote the book. And I'm really excited. It's just hit the shelves. The response has been great. And I think that it really is a wonderful resource for anyone who's either contemplating getting divorced or going through it.
Thanks, Anne. Yeah, I was going to ask you, at what point should people be reading this? Because, I mean, it seemed like in your story, at the time, you thought everything was okay until you realized it wasn't. And that might have been a little too late for the book.
Such a good question. So, yes, I wrote the book because if I had had this sort of guidance when the red flags began popping up, which was 2 years before that Tuesday night, it really would have saved me a lot of grief. So in other words, what I mean by that is I think most women engage in a bit of what I'll call willful blindness. Mm. There are flags, red flags, I'll call them. And, you know, like in my situation, I was ignoring them because I wanted everything to continue as it was. If I had had this book, which provides a lot of what I call insider tips, the things that I've learned as a family law attorney, that you can do to be prepared, then it would have saved me a lot of anguish and money down the road. So for example, I suggest that, and really all women should do this so that they're financially savvy, whether they're getting divorced or not. It's no fun to be caught by surprise. So I recommend that women really have an understanding of their finances and that they have a bank account in their own name, that they have some money in that bank account. I had a client who walked in once and she had $238 left in her bank account. And her husband, who was the assistant coach of one of Los Angeles's professional sports teams, had gone away on a road trip with the team. And then he came home early. And while she and the kids were out to dinner, he stole the teenage son's Jeep and loaded it up with his belongings and left. And then he cleaned out all the bank accounts and left her with $238 and sent her a text and told her he did it so she couldn't hire a lawyer.
Wow.
Now that's an extreme example, of course, but I do see this sort of thing happen from time to time. And although we were able to go to court and take care of things, you know, she was in a full blown panic by the time she ended up in my office. So my point is, you want to have resources set aside in your own name. You want to have credit cards, a couple credit cards in your own name. And you want to have an understanding of where the money is where your assets are and how they're held. And that will save your lawyer, in the event that you need to retain one, a tremendous amount of time. And it will save you a lot of money if you take those steps in advance.
Thanks, Anne. And if I recall correctly, that story where he cleaned out the bank account, there was about $300,000 in that account. So one day they had $300,000. The next day she had $200.
That's right. So, you know, with a joint bank account, and I represented another gal where the husband was siphoning off hundreds of thousands of dollars to an account in Argentina before we got into court. So you can pull half the money out, legally pull out half the money in a joint bank account if you're in a community property state like California, for example. But I don't recommend it because it can create all kinds of problems and bills can start bouncing and so forth. But certainly it's wise to have some money socked away in a separate account so that you can take care of yourself in the event that you need to, if something happens unexpectedly, and also so you can retain a lawyer, because lawyers typically won't work for you unless you retain them, which means you have to pay them a certain amount of money in order to get your case started. And that retainer figure varies depending upon where you live. But it could be, it's always a couple thousand dollars, but it could be as high as some lawyers in LA charge $20,000, which I know is a lot. But they will not lift a pencil to begin working on your case until you retain them, typically.
Mm. Thank you, Anne. Yeah, I can just imagine how devastating it is to be in that position and to feel like the rug has just been ripped right under you. And, you know, you mentioned that that was a pretty extreme situation, but things like that do happen. And a lot of it, like you said, is these little signs come up and we bury our head in the sand because we don't want to deal with the idea that maybe we can't trust our partner, or maybe our partner is losing interest, or all of these things. It's just such a heavy topic, but it's so important that we empower ourselves. So at what point do you recommend people start taking responsibility for their own financial well-being? I would imagine, like right now, today, as we're listening to this, start to take steps.
Yeah, I mean, if anything comes of this broadcast, I would hope that would be the lightning bolt. You know, if we could do one thing for our daughters, it would be to teach them at a very early age the importance of taking responsibility for themselves in all things, including their finances, because it does empower you. I mean, I really do see a difference between the women who walk through the door of my office that are in that position where they know where the money is, they understand where the assets are, how the assets are held, and those who walk in and have no idea. I mean, they're really frightened. And so a lot of what allows someone to take the necessary steps to move out of a bad relationship is having the courage to step out of that relationship and to not be fearful. And so that, again, that's why I wrote the book, to provide the guidance. There's a section in each chapter about getting control of your finances, and walks you through step by step, so that if you're not currently in that place, you can do what's required to get there.
Mm. Thank you, Anne. We are speaking right now with Anne Grant. She's the author of The Divorce Hacker's Guide to Untying the Knot, What Every Woman Needs to Know About Finances, Child Custody, Lawyers, and Planning Ahead. TheDivorceHacker.com is Anne's website. And you have a JD, that's a doctorate in justice? What does that stand for?
It's a Juris Doctorate. I am an attorney. I've been practicing for over 20 years. And so, yes, Dr. Grant, I suppose.
So what does Dr. Grant say to the question of, well, I believe that trust is really important in a relationship. So if I'm having to protect myself already going in when things are even maybe seem okay to me, isn't that not being true to my trust in the marriage?
That's a good question. You know, I think that what really is important to make any relationship work is to have, to not have a power imbalance. You know, as I work with the women that come through the doors of my office, often what I will find that is at the core of the problems that they're having, it comes down to a power imbalance. And it could be financial. It could be in terms of their jobs. It could be in terms of who's spending the most time with the children. So I think that if we can correct that, and one of the ways to do that is by becoming knowledgeable. Knowledge is power. And again, that's why I wrote the book, and I also conduct workshops in order to give the women the tools that they need so they can take back their power if they're feeling like they are in this somewhat disadvantaged position. So the more you know, the more knowledgeable you are, the more empowered you will become, whether you're contemplating divorce or in the throes of divorce or just starting out in a relationship.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Anne. Yeah, I feel like it's so important. I used to have this idea that I needed to find a man who could take care of me financially, because at the time I really wasn't earning much money and I didn't have a lot of personal empowerment around money. And I eventually realized that, well, if I don't start to create my own empowerment around money, then even if I do find that man who's really well off, we're never going to have an equal relationship.
That's so true. That's a really good insight. And I think it's absolutely critical for women to recognize right now. I mean, we're seeing a real shift in power, what's going on with power. We're seeing it at a global level, at a national level, in ways that we've never witnessed, certainly. We're seeing it within our relationships, and we're seeing it within ourselves. And so I had the same epiphany, actually. I was, it's what caused me to go to law school. In the early days, I realized that, like you, I was in a job where I was making less money than my partner, and I realized I didn't want to be dependent upon a man. And so I went to law school and got the skills, specifically with the intention of being self-sufficient. And boy, that has really served me well, because when I told you my story, when we went through the recession and my law firm dissolved, I had the skill set so I could start up my own practice and create a business where I could be available to my three kids and do it on my own terms. But it's because I realized early on that, like you, I didn't want to have to be reliant upon someone else to take care of me. And I think that that is also just, if we could teach our daughters, you know, one thing, that would be a really important lesson to teach them. And what I do in The Divorce Hacker is for women who are going through divorce and who are finding themselves in a situation where they're either underemployed or not employed. One of the inconvenient truths about divorce is that used to be in the olden days, you could go to court and get spousal support or alimony, which was sort of like, you know, it could take care of you for the rest of your life. Well, that's not the case anymore. The way judges look at these situations is where there's so many available options for women to be employed, they expect you to become self-sufficient. And even if you do need alimony or spousal support for a period of time, it's usually not going to be for the rest of your life unless you're disabled. You know, unless there's a really good reason. So there's a section in each chapter of my book about career, and I spend a lot of time talking about how to enhance your earning power or get back to work if you've been out of the workforce for a while, because it's changed so much. Things have changed so rapidly. So I have a lot of very practical tips and information about what you can do if you're in that situation, because that's a very daunting situation for a lot of women that are going through this.
And I think, I mean, even before it gets to the divorce point, it's nice to know that you have the resources, whether it's to do with a relationship or a toxic work environment or whatever. It's nice to know that we have a little bit of money and a little bit of ability to say no. I'm walking away from this because it's not a good situation.
Exactly. I mean, that really was at the core of my decision to go to law school. I was in a relationship that I knew wasn't working out, and I felt trapped. And I just decided it was so unbearable that I never wanted to have that feeling again. And so that was my motivation going back and getting my JD, my Juris Doctorate degree, which, you know, when I went through the divorce with three children, you know, it kind of saved my life because I didn't have to stay stuck. And that's also really one of the themes of my book is, look, I'm an advocate for great relationships and good marriages, but what I'm not an advocate for is staying stuck in a bad marriage. And so I want my readers to know and your audience to realize that, you know, should that be the case, there are options and you can move out of it. It is possible.
And I think even in the early days of a relationship, even if the marriage is still healthy relatively, if a person is in a position where they are afraid to leave because of finances, or they're afraid to leave because they don't have any other emotional support or whatever it may be, there's fear and dependence there, that is going to weaken the relationship.
That's right. Yeah. And it creates this power imbalance that I was referring to. So certainly, I think one of the elements of healthy relationships is to be self-reliant. That way you bring more to the relationship. There's nothing worse than being with a needy partner. There's nothing that's going to drive someone away quicker than someone who's needy. So, and certainly, you know, even if you're able to stay together for any period of time, it's not going to be a healthy relationship. So I'm sure you found, and I have too, that, you know, being independent just enables you to experience life in a whole new way and with a whole new level of joy.
Beautifully said. Again, we are speaking with Anne Grant. She is the author of The Divorce Hacker's Guide to Untying the Knot. Her website is thedivorcehacker.com. Now, before the show started, you mentioned a statistic about how millennial women actually, surprisingly enough, seem to be giving up even more control over finances than previous generations of women.
Yeah, I was just reading a report that shocked me, and it had the gist of it was why aren't women taking more responsibility for their financial well-being? And a statistic that I did not expect to see was that millennial women seem to be ceding even more authority in that regard to their partners, and it was unclear why. I don't know why that would be. But certainly it's not a good move. So, you know, you want to trust your partner and work together, and that's critical in order to have a solid relationship and move forward. But I think it's really important to understand, what's coming in and what's going out. You know, I was one of the best bad examples of this. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you, so in my situation, I was very busy with a job, in downtown LA. I had an hour long commute in and back, and then we had three children. So my days were jam packed, and I sort of just figured my, spouse was taking care of the finances. And yet what I learned when we, separated was that there were a lot of things occurring that I was unaware of, and they certainly weren't in our financial best interest. So I really learned a hard lesson, and I don't think, having gone through that, you can underestimate the importance of being informed in that regard.
But Anne, what about, and I know that you had a period of time where you were not working to raise your children, and many people do value having at least one parent in the home pretty much full time. So how do you navigate the having financial responsibility and empowerment and also doing the job that we choose to do with raising our children?
It's a great question, and I used to get asked this by some of the younger associates at the law firm that I worked at. How do you balance family responsibilities, having children, and a career? And you know, the way I see it, for myself at least, and for a lot of women, is that our careers don't proceed in a straight line. Our lives don't either. They're not linear. They're sort of like a jaggedy line. There were times where I stepped out of the workforce and worked part-time when the children were really young. There was the period of time where I had taken some time off actually to raise the kids. And then my law firm dissolved. So through that process, what I had to do was really dig deep. It was, what seemed like a crisis at the time ended up being a blessing in that it forced me to be a lot more entrepreneurial than I would have typically have been in starting my own practice, and step out of my comfort zone, do things that I never anticipated I would do that took me to a place I never expected to be. So, life can be that way. Sometimes we get thrown a curveball. Things don't go according to plan, and yet it can deliver us right where we need to be in order to meet our purpose. So my advice for women is you have to do what feels right. Certainly, I think it's wonderful to be able to take time off if you can, as much time as possible to raise your children. I value those years when they were young and I was home with them. But I think it's also important to always, and it's more available now than ever, to keep your toe in the water, if you will, or finger in the pot with your work. We can work remotely now. We don't have to be in the office all the time. There's so many ways that we can stay up to speed with the technology that we have available, so that as our children get older, we can jump back into the workforce. Or if things go in directions we don't anticipate, we lose our spouse or we end up needing to get divorced, we're able to step up and do what is needed.
Mm. And I can imagine also that there's value in still working a little bit, even if it's just very part-time or occasional freelance work, because that keeps us connected to other adults.
Yes. Yeah. And I found that actually made me a better parent. Staying home with three little kids, it can be really tedious. And so I actually started teaching law school, which was stimulating and interesting and did keep me connected. And then I began doing some blogging, some writing. So there are things that you can do while you're still raising your children. You can have some flexibility that keep you in touch with other adults, and it's stimulating intellectually.
And it's also about maintaining a sense of purpose outside of just being a mother, because so many people, when their kids start to get to the age where they don't really need their parents anymore, a lot of people feel that loss of purpose.
Absolutely. I see that a lot. And a lot of the things that I write about in the book, Divorce Hacker, are equally applicable for someone who's going through that sort of empty nest syndrome. And it's a real feeling of loss. There's a real grieving process associated with it. But I see that as a really optimal time for us to really reinvigorate our careers. I'm actually in that situation now where my youngest child is a senior in high school and we're looking at colleges, and my two older daughters are launched. One is a senior in college and the other just finished graduate school. So I'm also going through that now. And a lot of the things I write about in the book have really helped me as I'm anticipating the empty nest. So, it's a time of, I'm excited about having the freedom to do even more, and take my career in new directions, to write more, to speak more. So with everything in life, there's the give and the take. So when we lose something, it really carves us out. I think there's a saying, it carves us out for greater joy. It's really how we look at it, what we do with it. Same thing with a divorce. You know, that could feel like the end of the world to someone. It did to me at first, and yet in some ways it was a great gift. So it's how we look at it, what we do with it, and how we, what we do with our energy around it so that we can find the opportunities in those moments where we're maybe experiencing some loss.
Have you ever thought about going abroad to study, work, intern, or learn a language? Mark Sunday, October 21st in your calendar and get down to the Vancouver Convention Center East Building to find out how. All the experts under one roof. Top universities, gap year specialists, and student travel organizations. Feature seminar on scholarships starts at noon and expo opens at 1 p.m. Admission is free. Check online at studyandgoabroad.com for more info.
The Vancouver International Film Festival is back this fall. Experience the best Canadian and world cinema in your own backyard. There's tons of films and documentaries, fused with industry creator talks, live music, and immersive events. You can catch the world premiere of Robin Hayes' Anthem of a Teenage Prophet, maybe a creator talk with Michael Schur of NBC's The Good Place, or a screening of Jason Reitman's The Frontrunner, starring Hugh Jackman. The festival takes place from September 27th to October 12th. Tickets are on sale now at viff.org, that is, viff.org.
So again, we're speaking with Anne Grant. She's the author of The Divorce Hacker's Guide to Untying the Knot, What Every Woman Needs to Know About Finances, Child Custody, Lawyers, and Planning Ahead. I don't want to discriminate against men because it's certainly not only women who get the shaft sometimes when in divorce proceedings.
Right. You're right about that. And the book is not man-bashing at all. I want to make that really clear. I have a lot of male clients. And actually, this book in many ways is equally applicable to them. But the reason I wrote it and I targeted it to women is because they often seem to be at somewhat of a disadvantage in this process. They sometimes find themselves feeling sort of caught by surprise and flat-footed, as we've talked about, with respect to the finances and how they're going to deal with that. So I did feel like it was important to have a toolkit, something that was really geared specifically to women and address a lot of the concerns that I was seeing in my practice as they were coming through my doors in a very practical way so that they could get their lives on track, not feel like a deer in the headlights, which that's one of the common reactions, is to be sort of frozen. I went through that myself and not knowing what to do. And, you know, a lot of things can go awry when you're feeling frozen and curled up in the fetal position. So this is the guidebook so that you can start taking proactive steps so that you can create a new and better life along the lines that you want. And I also have developed an app to implement the tools in the book. It's the Divorce Hacker app. And so it provides a lot of handy checklists in a format that are easy to use. For example, one of the things I talk about in the book is the top 10 questions to ask when you're interviewing divorce lawyers. And I know that women, when they're interviewing for divorce lawyers, sometimes are nervous. And so those top 10 questions are in the app and you can have them right there at your fingertips.
What are a couple of the most important questions to ask?
So for example, you will probably ask, how much is my divorce going to cost and how long will it take? And you can expect the answer to be, well, it depends on how litigious your spouse is. And that's actually not a bad answer because it's true. But the important follow-up question to ask is, how long do most of your divorces take? And if the answer is 5 years, you should run. My philosophy is that most divorces ought to be wrapped up in a year or less. And that's why broken the book down into 8 chapters. Because I think if you can create a human being in 9 months, you ought to be able to get divorced in less time. It really shouldn't take that long. So that's one of the tips.
And we can talk a little bit more about how the book is laid out, but I also like how you go over like the different types of divorces. So there's the going to court, and there's the using a mediator, and sort of the pros and cons to each, because a lot of people, especially if they're personalities are maybe a little more passive, they might want to go into mediation, but that's where they can really be taken advantage of.
Yeah, I'm glad that you raised that. So, you know, ever since Gwyneth Paltrow coined the term conscious uncoupling, I've found that a lot of people coming into my office really want to go the mediation route. And mediation is a good way to get divorced if there are several things present. So in that instance, you need to have a situation where both parties want to get divorced. In other words, if one of them doesn't, they can drag their feet and it could be really prolonged longer than you'd like it to be. And you both need to be willing to be reasonable and compromise. And if those three things are present, then mediation may be a really good way to go. But if, on the other hand, those things aren't present, or if you're just so opposed to being in the same room with your spouse that you just can't stand that idea. I had a friend who said, you know, if I could sit down and be in the same room with my husband and communicate about things, we wouldn't be getting divorced. Then mediation can be problematic because the mediator's neutral. He or she doesn't represent you. They're not your attorney. They're really looking for ways to come to the middle, to find a compromise. And so if your partner isn't willing to do that, if they're just completely unreasonable or they suffer from an addiction or a mental disorder. I have one of these cases recently where we were trying to mediate, and it became clear that I was actually representing the husband, and it became clear that the wife was just so angry. She wanted to keep the case going just because she was using it to vent her emotions. And so finally we ended up in court. In fact, we were in court just Friday to get a result. So you have to be mindful of that when you're figuring out the best way to get divorced. Traditional litigation gets a bad rap. And, you know, there's a good reason for that. There's a lot of divorce lawyers out there who sadly take advantage of particularly women who are kind of at their most vulnerable often in this situation, and which is why I wrote the book, so that they won't be. But in any event, they can, you know, the lawyers bill by the hour, and I've seen cases where they'll do things that don't need to be done, and they'll pad the bill, and they'll prolong the case because that's how they make money. So again, I want women to be knowledgeable and follow some of the insider tips that I have in the book about things to look out for, so that they're not taken advantage of if they do need to go the traditional route and end up in a courtroom.
Oh, and one of those questions when talking to a lawyer is about their paralegals, because some lawyers will bill, they'll use lawyers to do like the basic paperwork that a paralegal could be doing for a much lower fee.
That's true. So as you're asking questions and figuring out who you're going to hire, one of the things you want to ask is who else is going to be working on my case? And you do want a firm where they have paralegals and others that can do the clerical work, because they can do it at a much lower rate. But you want to be certain that the attorney that you're retaining, that you're hiring, is available to talk with you about strategic issues and settlement proposals, and that they share the same mindset that you share, which hopefully is that, you know, knowing when to fight and knowing when not to. That's really important. And one of the most important things to assess when you're interviewing attorneys is what their philosophy is about that.
Thanks, Anne. And you also have a section specifically about divorcing someone with a narcissistic personality.
Yes. So, you know, I'm seeing a lot of instances where this is coming up, and divorcing a narcissist has its own set of ground rules, because the narcissist will stop at nothing to get what they want. So in other words, what I mean by that is, for example, if you have children, they will not compromise and do things in the children's best interest because it's all about winning for them. It's very, very difficult when you're going through this process. So it's important that you retain a lawyer that has some experience in dealing with narcissistic spouses. And it's important that you understand that the only thing that works with them is to set appropriate boundaries. So what doesn't work with the narcissist that will work with, you know, someone else would be explaining why you're doing something, appealing to their empathy. They have no empathy. Mm-hmm. And the only thing that will work with them is to set clear boundaries, enforce those boundaries. And it's really important to have a strong support system, because you can find yourself feeling like you're going crazy. They enjoy gaslighting you, making you, blaming you for everything. And so it's really important that you have a good therapist, that you can talk to, that can help you recognize what's truth and what's fiction when you're divorcing a narcissist.
Thank you, Anne. So do you want to talk a little bit about how the book is laid out? Because there's lots of different sections and it's also kind of got a timeline.
Sure, I'd be happy to. So in each chapter of the book, there's 8 chapters, one for each month. And that's true also with the app. It's divided into legal, financial, children, career, and well-being, and also real estate. I have found that these are the 6 categories that most women are dealing with as they're going through a divorce and they're recreating a new life. And so what I do is I walk you through each of these categories each month so that nothing falls through the cracks. So, for example, in month 1, there are certain tasks that need to be done to stay on track with your the legal component and the financial component. But if you're not also focusing simultaneously on your well-being, on your mindfulness, then you're just not going to get through this with your sanity intact. So mindfulness is a really important part of this. It's not just a throwaway. And I stress that because, you know, I talked about the situation where we were in court just Friday with the gal on the other side who's not mindful. And, you know, if you do that, you're going to spend a lot of money and you're going to experience a lot of anguish that's unnecessary. Again, it's really important to know what to let go of, when to let go, when to fight and when not to. So the mindfulness piece is critical. And I also know that women, often a big issue is the home, what to do with the family home. I had a gal who came in, last week and was just barely retaining me, and yet she was in a panic about the house. And so, you know, I explained to her that, yeah, we're going to get there, but we don't have to do that right now. So the book really breaks down tasks and tells you what you need to focus on, when to focus on it, and when you can put something else on the back burner. And in this way, you can get everything done. Things don't fall through the cracks, and you can mindfully create the life that you want.
Thanks, Anne. I'm actually thinking, before I ask you that question, I want to say again, we're speaking with Anne Grant. She's the author of The Divorce Hacker's Guide to Untying the Knot. You can find her at thedivorcehacker.com. But with regards to that mindfulness, I wonder if that's another question that people might want to ask their potential lawyers is, what is your mindfulness practice?
I think that's a great question, because I have found, you know, that's how I got through my divorce, was through my mindfulness practice. And it has become the cornerstone now of my practice and the book. You know, the gals that come through the doors of my practice often are just terrified. You know, this is probably the biggest challenge they have faced in their life and may ever face. And so, you know, to get through what they have to get through and to deal with what they need to deal with, and certainly if they have children, to show up the way they need to show up with, there's nothing more important than grounding and being mindful and taking those steps very, very seriously. And I think that it's what's allowed me to set myself apart in my own practice and to be very present and give my clients what they need, you know, because all of their needs are different. These people really find themselves feeling like they're in a moment of crisis. And so we work together, we break it down. That's what the book and the app do as well. It breaks it down into manageable chunks so that you can overcome the overwhelm.
Thanks, Anne. And I'm guessing that most of the people listening to this interview now have some kind of mindfulness practice, or at least are working towards developing a mindfulness practice. But the importance of using it to get through this kind of crisis and this kind of life transition is so important. But being mindful and having a mindfulness practice can also be one of the things that prevents a divorce from ever needing to happen as well.
Of course. Yeah, I look back on my own situation, and I often think that if I knew some of the things that I know now in that regard, there are many things I would have done differently. I don't know whether the marriage could have been saved or not, but certainly I would have approached many things differently. And as I went through the process in the beginning, at least, you know, as I was interacting with my now ex-husband and the children, there were many times where I wasn't mindful. And you know, it was a very high conflict situation. I remember my son, suffering from, you know, rashes and not being able to go to school, and I had hives, and then, so what happened was, once I let go of all the anger and the bitterness, I really experienced a miraculous transformation. And I've witnessed this in my clients too, when this happens. It just changed everything. I remember it like it was yesterday. I was driving down the freeway here in LA, and we were headed to trial, and everything was teed up so that, you know, I think I was going to win, which is kind of uncommon in a divorce case. There usually aren't any winners, but in this particular situation, it had to do with the children. And I called up my ex, or he wasn't my ex at the time. I called him up. We hadn't talked in 5 years. The only time we'd spoken to each other is, you know, in a courtroom. And I called him, and he was shocked to get the call. And I said, you know, let's just let the kids choose. Let's let them decide where they're going to spend their time. And he was stunned. I said, let's take this trial off calendar. And we did. And the kids then chose where they were going to spend their time. They were old enough that they could. I let go of all the, you know, I was trying to control things. That was a huge lesson. And my life then took off in ways I couldn't have imagined. My son's rashes went away. My hives went away. My business doubled. I began dating. The kids were happy. So I do talk about that in the book. I think that's probably the penultimate lesson, in the last chapter, about not being bitter, but being better. And my story of letting go and what I learned from that.
Thanks so much, Anne. And I really love how you said you were able to give up control, and it's not a matter of letting go and like you said, ceding the responsibility. It's having personal responsibility for our own well-being, our own financial well-being as well, while not trying to control everything. And that's where the mindfulness comes in, is being able to walk that middle path.
That's right. So what happens in a divorce when it becomes, I find when it becomes very conflictual and acrimonious, is often it's a power struggle. And the children are often caught up in the midst of that and become the pawns, which is tragic. Mm-hmm. Nothing good comes from that. And certainly as the case gets more litigious, really the only people that benefit from that at the end of the day are the divorce lawyers, because the money ends up in their pockets and not in your bank account where it belongs. So if you can step back, of course, you've got to, you know, have a backbone and assert yourself and your rights. And that's really the fine balance, is how to assert your rights so that you're not a doormat and you get what you need. But at the same time, you don't become so emotionally locked into the battle that you can't move forward. And so the mindfulness practices in the book in each chapter, really, that is the common goal between all of them, is how to help you move through the process and let go so that you really can be in a better place.
If you're one of the millions of Canadians who experience depression, anxiety, or some other form of mental illness, there's a free course that can help. The Wellness Recovery Action Plan is an evidence-based program that works. It's developed and facilitated by peers who have experienced their own mental health challenges and have used RAP to recover and maintain long-term stability. It's based on the key concepts of hope, personal responsibility, education, self-advocacy, and support. For more information about the free RAP groups hosted by Vancouver Coastal Health, visit their peer-led website, spotlightonmentalhealth.com.
People are really done with politics as usual.
But then it's all about the competition.
Every Vancouverite has their own story.
It's the perfect time for our alternative.
Vancouver's municipal election looms. October 20th. Do you know who's running for
City Council, School Board, Parks Board?
This is a wacky municipal election, and you're going to want to stay updated. Download Seeking Office, the newest municipal elections podcast from CITR's News Collective. Find Seeking Office on iTunes and Stitcher, or wherever you download your podcasts, starting July 3rd.
We are speaking with Anne Grant. She's the author of The Divorce Hacker's Guide to Untying the Knot. And the app is called the Divorce Hacker's app?
Yes, it's available in the App Store. It's called Divorce Hacker.
Awesome. And Anne's website is thedivorcehacker.com. And I'm just wondering if there's one message that we've been talking for almost an hour. So if there's one thing you want everyone listening to remember or sit with today, what would that be?
Well, the message I'd like to leave our listeners with is that divorce is not the end. It's really the opportunity for a new beginning. For years, we were told that married women were happier and healthier than their single counterparts. And yet a newly released study reveals exactly the opposite. Single women eat healthier, exercise more, and drink less than married women. Their waists are smaller, and they're actually even having more sex than their married counterparts. So the truth is, you don't have to stay married and miserable. Divorce Hacker is the roadmap to take back your power and create the life you want.
Ooh, I love it. Thanks so much, Anne. Again, the name of the book is The Divorce Hacker's Guide to Untying the Knot, What Every Woman Needs to Know About Finances, Child Custody, Lawyers, and Planning Ahead. And mindfulness is right at the top of that list. I want to thank you so much, Anne, for being with us today. And I want to thank you for spending this hour with us. I hope that all of your relationships are strong and healthy. And if the ones that aren't, you're able to empower yourself and take responsibility for your part in that. I want to send you lots of love for a wonderful week. Be well. Namaste.
Up next is Parts Unknown with DJ Chris Arific on CITR.
Timber Concerts and CITR present Idols with guests Bambara, Thursday, October 4th at the Rickshaw Theatre. Tickets are available online and at Red Cat Main Street, Red Cat Hastings Street, and Zulu.
The Vancouver International Film Festival is back.